You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone, and you're all welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's series 4, episode 21 tonight. Kieran Burke, your host as ever, and we're making a little bit of history tonight on BTS. For the first time ever, I've got two co-hosts with me. You might remember if you listened to last week's show, we were trying out a little bit new bit of software, a new bit of tech, and a lot of good feedback in terms of the sound quality and the back and forth it gives us here in terms of debate. So I thought, why not try it out to an even further extent this week by getting two co-hosts on, and that is Gary Riley and James Donnelly. Lads, how are you doing?
Well, I go first there with you, Gary. I'm Graham Burke, thanks.
Yeah, not too bad, Kieran. How are you getting on?
Off to a flyer, lads. Off to a flyer. Look, we have an absolutely jam-packed show to get through this week. We're going to start by looking back at the playoff games, and we'll hear from some of the people involved. Joe Gorman, Dean Byrne, Dara Doyle. We're going to hear from all three of those Longford Town men after that amazing win over UCD. We'll hear from Julian Canny later on the show as well. He's going to be giving us his thoughts on Galway, a good Galway fan that always comes on the show here regularly, Julian. And we're also going to hear from Adrian Carberry, the Athlone Town manager, after their stunning 4-1 win over Shells. And of course, we'll talk Premier Division, we'll talk Europa League and much, much more. So absolutely loads to get through. But lads, we'll start with Bray. A couple of weeks ago, it looked like they were home and hosed, that they were going to lift the title and be in the Premier Division next season. But a 1-0 defeat to Galway ends their season. Wilson Wawiru with the goal. James, he's a player that's really caught the eye in recent weeks, and he's actually nominated for the Player of the Month.
Burgo, I told you Galway would rob them. My bet came in. I deserve a trophy for this now. Look, Bray are probably sick now, and I feel for Gary Cronin. But that's football at the end of the day. You know, home and host is never fully done until the fat lady sings, I suppose. And it just shows that it's never over right until the dying moments. And as you said, Wilson Wawiru popping up there to get the all-important winner. He's a good player now, I have to say. I've seen him a good few times over the last year or two. More so this season, he's kind of broken into the team. But a player, the month nomination is well deserved, I think. They don't do too many of them from the first division. So I'm delighted someone got it anyway. And I think the player got one as well.
Yeah, you have to be playing well in the first division to get nominated. They do rarely include them, which is a shame. But great to see Wilson Wawiru nominated. Gary, from a Bray point of view, though, what a sickening end to the season. As I said, with two games to go, they were in the driving seat for the title. That defeat to Galway ended their title hopes. And it's Galway that ends their promotion hopes overall here.
Well, they must be sick at the sight of them at this point. It was a woeful goal to give away. It was just chaos in the Bray box, and then it was just tapped in by Wawiru. So, look, it's a disappointing end to Bray's season. There's no doubt about it. We all thought that they'd be thereabouts, and they were, but a lot of us, probably not you, Kieran, but we thought that they'd push on and win the league, but two sickening blows, late goals in both games that downed Bray. So, look, they'll be sick. Supposed to be a bit sorry for former Town player Gary Shaw and Gary Cronin, but I won't be that sorry for them to put a few passes this year. So, look, they'll be a strong contenders next season. So, there's some consolation for them.
Let's move on to speak about Longford. 3-2 winners against UCD. All three of us were lucky enough to be there. It's just a pity there wasn't a crowd in, because I can only imagine how many limbs there would have been when that Dean Byrne goal went in. James, you've gone a bit viral in the last couple of days. You were roaring behind the cameras. You recorded it. What an unbelievable game of football. A great advert for the playoffs.
I still laugh to myself thinking about what way my reaction came out. But like, being behind the camera and being in the press boxes and all, you don't get to fully experience moments like that a lot, because you're kind of doing your work and you're concentrating on the game. And like, all season I haven't really shown too much emotion when we've scored in big matches or our results have come in, but just, you know, stuff like that doesn't happen often. The very last kick of the game, the 124th minute, Dean Byrne, God love him, hadn't scored all year with his injury and coming back, and he was just trying to find his form again, and to get a goal like that with seconds to play, and it was just unreal. I'll never forget it as long as I live.
Yeah, it was something. What a goal to win. It very much had shades of Kevin O'Connor from 2013. It was a very similar strike. Gary, I know you're not going to have any sympathy for UCD, but I have to say, I thought UCD were absolutely excellent on the day. They played some lovely one-touch football. They really are a great team to watch. And if they can keep that team together for next season, they should be in the mix again. What did you make of UCD's performance?
Yeah, they were brilliant. And I know last week we were kind of apprehensive about this game, and rightly so. There were some of the play that they were doing, there was times that me and you were looking at each other going, Jesus, these are a great bunch. Such young players playing, you know, you could say playing the game the right way or whatever, but some of their play in and around the Longford box and in the final third of at least was just brilliant. They were, well, of course, be very disappointed with themselves, but as you said, I had them written off earlier on this season. I didn't think that they'd have the stomach to go ahead and get into the playoffs, but look, they did a great job. They really put it up to Longford, and it took a 90th minute equaliser to bring it to extra time, and then a final minute of injury time and extra time to put them down. So they'll be very disappointed, but they're a great footballing side, and if Andy Myler keeps the bulk of them together, they'll be a force next season.
Yeah, and would you agree with me, Gary? It had shades, I suppose, of the recent meeting in the league where UCD absolutely played Longford off the park in the first half, but in the second half, Longford came out and they played a more direct game. They just looked to get the ball forward and create chances as opposed to trying to dominate possession and play a slow possession game and try and pick little holes in the defence after they'd moved the ball side to side. I thought Longford were really, really direct in the second half of normal time, and they created numerous opportunities. They would have been absolutely sick if it ended 1-0, but finally they score from a set piece after conceding from a set piece. Yet another, they're in double digits now this season, Longford, in terms of conceding goals. But when Longford roll their sleeves up, they can be more than just this passing side that everyone thinks about with Longford Town.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't probably look too much into the second half performance. They really pegged on anyone that was played in midfield or further up was pegged on, no matter who they were. So it was all hands to the pump job to try and get that equalising goal, and it came off from a centre-back from a set-piece. But look, Longford really won't be too worried about that. They got through and they did what needed to be done. Still disappointing from a Longford perspective to score from yet another set piece. It's and to be fair, you could kind of see it coming from the stand there on Saturday. There was a bit of miscommunication, or I don't know if you want to call it lack of leadership.
There was a couple of just poor balls into the area. There was some balls from UCD from corners that were hitting just towards the front post with no real purpose, and they caused absolute mayhem in the Longford box, and only for Dean Zambra clearing one off the line, it would have been 2-0 at half time and it would have been game over. It would have been season over. So you're 100% right there. They really need to get the set piece situation sorted out.
Yeah, but my question is, you know, they've been conceding set pieces the whole season ever since the return from lockdown. We talked about them numerous times before. Gary Shaw scored two from corners in Bishopsgate, and that problem doesn't seem to have been rectified. So, look, it's probably going to be a target for Galway to attack Longford with. So, hopefully, Longford will have addressed that this week.
Yeah, I suppose the question I'm asking Gary there as well, when I go back to how Longford rolled their sleeves up and they were more direct in the second half and it brought about more chances, I've kind of been advocating this for quite a while in the season. Do you think Longford would be better maybe to ease off on the possession side of things and play a more direct game? Because anytime they do it, it seems to bear fruit. And you look at the players they have, they've got the best hold-up striker in the league in Rob Manley. They've got Warfield to come off the bench. They've got some really good wingers in Barnes and in Grimes, Adam Evans as well. They've got two really attacking fullbacks, McNally and Elworthy. It looks like a team that's set up to get the ball forward quickly, get crosses into the area and make things happen.
Yeah, that's true, but I think some of the crossing that has been delivered in from Longford this season has been really poor. We often notice Rob Manley out in the wing trying to gather up the ball himself when he should be playing within the 18 yards of the width of the penalty box, rather. So what I'm not sure what if it's too much possession and not enough crossing going in for Rob Manley, and then even when the crosses do go in, they're just not a great quality. I must point out, though, Dylan Grimes had an absolute stormer on Saturday. He really ran the show in before he was taken off. So fair play to him, and he hit some lovely free kicks in that could have equalised the game earlier on, but it's a great game, and hopefully he'll have a good one on Friday night.
Yeah, but you were there when I was interviewing Dara after the game, and I said it to him after the interview. I said, Dara, I'm not going to lie, I was absolutely cursing you in the stands when you took off Dylan Grimes and when you took off McNally. I thought they were Longford's two best players on the pitch, but he admitted it was just, look, he had options on the bench. He needed to get those options on the pitch to try and make something happen. And credit to him, it worked, because Warfield got the assist for the winner and Barnes played a big role in the result as well. Look, we'll hear more from the two lads in a moment, but now we're going to hear from two players that were involved in that fabulous game on Friday at the UCD Bowl. We're going to hear from Joe Gorman, who got a couple of goals, and we'll hear from the match winner, Dean Byrne.
I'm joined by Joe Gorman here at the Belfield Bowl. Longford Town 3, UCD 2, an unbelievable playoff semi-final, and this man next to me scored a couple of very important goals from set pieces. Joe, you must be absolutely on top of the world after that result.
I am. Just happy to be through to the next round, but to score two goals for a centre-half, you know, it doesn't come around very often, so I'll take all the plaudits, yeah.
And we actually set it up in the stand. You rarely see it where a team, they have three or four corners in a row and they actually score from it. Usually it's a head of steam and it ends. But you had five corners in a row before you finally headed one of them home.
I know, we haven't been very good on defensive corners, but it was about time we scored a few from attacking corners. So, look, we're, at the end of the day, we had to do something, didn't we? And thank God all the lads came together and we got the victory in the end.
Yeah, you do mention it there. You did go behind in the game, 18 minutes. Colin Whelan nods home. Again, another set piece. Why are Longford finding it so difficult to sort out that situation this season?
Look, you can go through it. You can strip it back, which we have, and sometimes it's just, as an individual, just a willingness to head the ball or just to stop your man from scoring. It's not rocket science at the end of the day, you know. It's just take a responsibility for your own man.
And you personally, this season, you've been in or out with the team. Would you say that's probably been one of your best displays in a town shirt, aside from the two goals? I thought defensively you're absolutely superb as well.
I don't know. Will you tell me?
Well, look, let's move on to the next game.
I'm just happy to be in the next round. If I'm out of the team, I'm supporting the lads. If I'm in the team, then I'm trying to keep my place, and hopefully I keep my place for the next game.
Yeah, another big one coming up Friday. It's going to be Galway. A little bit of confusion at the moment where it's going to be. Neutral venue, there's talk of. It could be in Longford either. Look, that won't matter to you, to the players. It's just get out there, get the job done. You're two games away from the Premier Division now.
Yeah, look, we wish it was at home with the fans. Unfortunately, the way it is at the moment. But anywhere, any place, any time, we'll take them on.
Joe, come on. I'm joined by the man of the moment, Dean Byrne. He got the match-winning goal, a five-goal thriller here at the Bowl. Longford Town come out on top, 3 goals to 2. Dino, it's been a long, long road for you to get to this point, so to get the winner as well, just how are you feeling right now?
I'm buzzing, absolutely buzzing, ecstatic. Still raw enough, it's only happened 20 minutes ago, but it's just football for you. We're 2-1 down with literally 30 seconds, 40 seconds left to play, wherever, and in the 90 minutes, and then Joe pops up, unbelievable tonight, and it could have been anyone that scored that goal, you know, the winner. But I'm just absolutely delighted that it's me, because I needed that big time. I've been doubting myself over the past couple of weeks, you know, but Johnny and Dara have been unbelievable for the mindset to me. But I'm just literally buzzing with that, and thankfully got through to next week's semi-final.
Yeah, you say it could be anyone that scored it. I don't think anyone could have put it right in the corner unlike yourself. It was an absolutely sensational strike.
Yeah, no, I like to do that. I like to get around the box, knockdowns and second chances and second balls and stuff. And thankfully I went in, you know. I gave the eyes to the keeper a bit, so he was left standing. Thankfully I went in.
And you had a few sighters before that. You come on a half-tighter in the second half, and you had a couple of little half chances on the edge of the box. But obviously that was an area you were told to get in, get about, get the second balls, and hopefully something would come up.
Yeah. Well, that's my game big time. And if I'm playing in the number 10 role, that is just feed off scraps and pick out passes and play Robin and play the other strikers in. But thankfully now it dropped to me to have a shot tonight, and it went in. So I'm literally buzzing with that.
Yeah, and I think we have to say a big well done to Callum Warfield as well for the goal. He holds the ball up really well. He's only a young man, but he's a big physical presence up there, and that's exactly what he was brought on to do.
Yeah, Callum's unbelievable. He's literally like a brick wall. You can literally play it to him. Constant wall passes with him, because nobody can get around him when he holds himself up. And he's a different aspect of what we have in Rob, whereas Rob can be direct as well. But Callum's unbelievable. His hold of play is unbelievable, in training especially as well.
Rob Manley's work rate as well is absolutely phenomenal, isn't it? I've never seen a striker run as much as he does.
Yeah, sometimes we have to
mix our game up. Like, where it's all, we do in training a lot of on the ground stuff where it's 1-2 zipping, but some games you have to mix it up and go plan B and hit along. And Rob works his socks off every single week, and he holds everything up for us. He wins fouls for us. It's like, it's so good to have a striker like that, especially when you're number 10, because you're winning fouls and you're getting around there, and he's just unbelievable to play with, Rob.
Yeah, and look, with the extra time taken into account, you played probably roughly around an hour or so tonight. Physically, how are you feeling? It's a big, quick turnaround out till Friday. Do you feel you've got 90 minutes in the tank, or do you have to just be careful still? It was a long, long time you were out of football.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Johnny and Dara have, and Stephen Meyer as well, they've managed me excellently. We've picked up a few niggles, especially in the last... I didn't play last week against Wexford because I was niggling. I had a niggle in the ankle, the same ankle. I think it's just down to scar tissues and stuff, but they... obviously prioritised this game tonight, and I only trained one session this week, so hopefully I can get a full session in this week, three, four sessions, and let's see what happens. I don't mind if I play, I play. If I don't, try and come on and do the same thing again, you know.
Your Twitter is absolutely blowing up there, so we'll let you go. We'll let you go in a second. But look, final question. Obviously, Galway next. We're two games away now, Longford Town from the Premier Division. There's been question marks over this team, whether they had the mental ability to turn results like that out. But clearly, maybe this could be a turning point tonight.
Yeah, so everyone inside the squad and everyone that knows the players, they understand the mindset from us. The character is unbelievable. It really is. And I think from the outside looking in, with some of the results that we've had, with the team that we have on paper, people are questioning everything about us, ability, everything. But I know for a fact that we have a strong, strong group, mentally and physically. And I think we're well equipped to go and beat Galway. I really do. We believe in us big time.
Good man, Dino. Go and reply to those tweets. For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Yeah, we'll speak more about the playoffs a little bit later on. Longford Town taking on Galway in the First Division playoff final at the UCD Bowl on this coming Friday night. But it's time to turn our focus to the Premier Division, lads. And Finn Harps were in action a couple of times this week. They had a fabulous 3-2 win over St. Pat's, James. But then, unfortunately, they were beaten by Rovers. But that Pat's result definitely keeps Harps in the mix going into the final day of the season. Could they pull themselves out of trouble yet?
I really think they could, Kieran. They're only 2 points behind Shells now, equal on games. The goal difference between them, I think, is only 3. I think Shells are on -7 and Harps are on -10, if I remember correct. But you know, what they're doing, it's like they left it till the business end of things to start playing a bit of football or something. You know, we'll see what happens towards the end and then get going. Maybe Ollie has told them. But Jesus, 3-2 at home to Pats. You know, Pats aren't doing too well themselves, let's be honest about it. But Harps got the result. And as you said, it puts them just behind Shells now. And you kind of expected the loss against Rovers, considering, you know, Rovers are champions now and they're on form or whatever. But, you know, as I said, all to play for now going into the last game or two. Shells are looking in serious bother and Harps are breathing down their neck.
Yeah, and Gary, you've been very critical of St. Pat's this season. Is this another blot on their copybook?
Oh yeah, of course. I didn't rate Pat's when I was seeing them in the first game of the season, and I think they just haven't really marched on. I know they had a good result there against Dundalk there the other day, but look, I don't really rate them, to be honest. I think there's a lot more work to be done on the part of Stephen O'Donnell. I said earlier on in the season he was probably should have been under a bit more pressure. But I think they're where we thought they would be, probably a bit higher than I thought they would be in my estimations. But
the question now is, where exactly will they finish? Because they could finish as high as fourth if they win their final game of the season. They've got two games, actually, because they play Rovers tomorrow as well. So they've got Rovers and then their final game of the season is at home to Bow. So they've got two Dublin derbies. If they win one or two of them, it could look very different. They could be a top four side, and then if cup results go their way, they could be in Europe. If they lose those two games, they could end up on the same amount of points as Finn Harps if Harps are to win their final game of the season. Now, I don't think relegation's in the question because there's a big vast in the goal difference there in favour of St. Pat's. But if Pat's were to finish down there on the same amount of points as Finn Harps, it'd be a really sour end to the season. And maybe there would be a couple of questions about how well this project has gone this season. But for me personally, it's O'Donnell's first full season in management. obviously the COVID situation hasn't helped trying to set up a team there. I think it's too early to be making calls. I think he'll definitely get another full year, but
no surprise that you're going easy on Stephen O'Donnell, Kieran. Look, I think with some of the players he's brought in, I know some of them, not all of them have performed, but I have to look at who's that chap they brought in from Scotland, quite a pretty penny, that Rennie bloke.
Yeah, he was a disaster. He never looked like a League of Ireland player at all. And he's gone back to Scotland, which is hard to believe because he certainly wasn't fit for this level of football.
No, certainly not. And I think League of Ireland player was a bit much to even describe him as a footballer at all. Obviously, I was going to say no disrespect to the fella, but that's a lot of disrespect. But yeah, he was rubbish. That player was brought in at some money, so and was shipped off just as quick. So, look, I think Stephen O'Donnell probably deserves to be under a bit of pressure. But then, as you said, it could go under a couple of wins in their last two games, which is quite unlikely in my eyes, out of either game. I think if Pat just say where they are, mid-table, it'll be all right for them. And give Stephen another go in next year.
Yeah, fair points. We'll only touch on this one quickly. Harps 0, Rovers 2. Goals from two players at opposite ends of their career. Joey O'Brien, the veteran, scoring on 33, and young Max Murphy scoring on 67. We've seen the likes of Dean Williams, Thomas Aluwu, Darren Nugent, Brandon Kavanagh all featuring for their hoops here. I thought Aluwu in particular was very, very impressive. He looks a real player, an old-fashioned winger. But we're starting to see the fruits of the Rovers Academy now, aren't we, James?
Ah, yeah. Like, in fairness to them, like, no matter what I've said about them in the past, they've the best academy set up in the country. I mean, the money they spend on developing younger players is just second to none. They're miles ahead of everybody else in doing it. And as you said, like Thomas Aluwu, we've seen him in the first division for the Rovers B team this year, and he has that look about him. He's that quality about him, and he's a big fella as well. So I expect him to go on and do good things for the club. If he's not sold in the meantime, I'm sure he has a few clubs watching him with the way he's going on.
Yeah, and just interesting while we're on the subject of the Shamrock Rovers second side. I'm sure you've both seen that expression of interest sent out by the FAI today, looking for new clubs to apply to the First Division. So we can only wait and see what that brings and what that means for Shamrock Rovers too going forward. There's a lot of question marks there. But let's move on. This is a game you mentioned already, Gary. St. Pat's won, Dundalk won. Really, really poor game of football, this one. And Dundalk fans not one bit happy after the game. Despite the European results, there's a lot of pressure starting to come onto their manager, Filippo. And we actually ran a poll on Between the Stripes on our Twitter account, and it got a massive reaction. We were simply asking, do you want him in or out for next season? And it was very, very tight, to say the least. It was 51% out, 49% in. So it looks like the Dundalk fan base is very, very split. And I know, Gary, we kind of already had this. We touched on this discussion last week. And you felt, and I know James, when he was on before as well, felt that given what he's done in Europe and he's turned the fortunes of the club around, he deserves a crack at it next year. But there's so many players out of contract at the end of the season. For me, he doesn't know the league. If they're to appoint someone like a director of football, maybe with a bit of knowledge, then it might work. But there's a lot of question marks over how Dundalk move forward next season.
Yeah, there is. But, you mentioned it before as well, that there's an awful amount of whinging going on around the Dundalk fans. And to be honest, I agree with you at the time, but I don't really know what they're looking for. They changed the manager. Vinny was part of the previous setup, was part of the first setup with Stephen Kenny. He had his own bite at it. And now Filippo's in. I don't think Filippo has done anything wrong to not warrant a go at it. They played all right in the Emirates there last week. So, what are Dundalk fans looking for? I'm not really sure.
Did you see Vinnie Peart's comments on that game, actually? He felt that Dundalk went there more as tourists, really, than to try and compete. He was disappointed that the attacking players in the team didn't have more of a go. What's your thoughts on that, Gary?
Well, like Vinny, of course, successful man as a player and as a manager, but probably not the right fella to be relying too heavily on, seeing how he left the club there not, what, 3 or 4 months ago. So, yeah, look, he's entitled to his opinion, but I wouldn't put too much stock in it just at the minute and comment on some other clubs. But I think with the way that he left the club, Probably not the best man to be making a comment on.
If I can just come in there, Kieran, I think I kind of agree with Gary there. Like, I'm not sure what the Dundalk supporters are expecting. Like, you could argue that maybe Filippo has focused too much on the European matches, and, you know, he's rested players in league games that they should have won, and they're getting a bit worried and all. But, like, that's a catch 22. If he had arrested players in the European matches and got slaughtered off the pitch, they would have been coming for his head. And if he hadn't arrested players in the league and they did fairly well, you know, you're not going to please everybody. And your poll kind of proved that. It's split down the middle nearly for who wants him and who doesn't. The fella has come in, and as you said, and as he's nearly admitted himself, he doesn't know the league. He doesn't know players. He doesn't have too many around him that can, you know, kind of point him in the direction. But he does at the same time. I mean, he has Shane Keegan there next to him, who by all means, to me, is coming across as more of an assistant manager than a video analyst for opposition matches. And I'm sure he's given him a few insights into his time in the league and dealing with Irish players and things like that. And you know, this thing of, oh, if players out of contract, that's not Filippo's fault. He was brought in the middle of a season, and before that there was no contract negotiations with players and things weren't being put in place that maybe should have been. But that's not down to the current manager. That was down to the club and, by all means, probably the previous manager as well. So I can't understand this thing of Dundalk fans expected more. I mean, they're in third place. Filippo only came in halfway during the season. They played fairly well against Arsenal in their own pitch. What more can you ask of the man?
Yeah, you make fair points there. I just think he's definitely going to need some support in terms of the recruitment and sorting out the contract negotiations. But Dundalk, the hierarchy has been such a circus this year. You'd really have concerns about their ability to manage that. So it's going to be a really interesting off-season at Dundalk. Look, we'll move on to the FAI Cup game of the weekend. It was Athlone beating Shelburne by 4-1. Yeah, folks, you heard that scoreline right. Athlone Town 4, Premier Division Shelburne 1. A hat-trick from Dean George, a goal from Big Scott Delaney, killed off with a consolation goal for Shelburne. Lads, did either of you see this coming? We'll go to you first, Gary.
No, I didn't. I couldn't believe it when I was seeing the scores pop up on my phone. I thought it was a mistake a few times, but look, Athlone, we thought that they improved coming to the end of the season this year. They were a bit blown apart earlier on, but they made some improvements. I thought Athlone played well against us when we beat them in Longford and beat them away, but they certainly had made strides. And I suppose with the league over, the first division over, and almost a free shot at the FAI Cup, with Shells coming down, sure, why not let loose and see what you can do? And it looks like Shells couldn't stand up to it at all. So fantastic result for Athlone, really hit me by surprise.
James Summer, the defending in this game from Shelburne, though, was absolutely unbelievable, and not in a good sense. They parted like the Red Sea for some of these Dean George goals.
Yeah.
I don't know what the problem, I don't know what's going on with them boys at all, to be honest. I think I said to you 2 weeks ago when I was on the podcast that it's just, to me, it looks like it's just a team of individuals of all decent quality that just can't come together and put in a performance. Now, I'm not sure what the crack is with expectations from their supporters there. I mean, it's their first year back in the Premier, fair enough. But you know, there's a bit of finance behind them and they've brought in some decent players. Now, in my opinion, they're decent, but I don't know what's going on, whether it's the tactics or they're just not performing. But I'd be a bit worried now if I was Ian Morris. I mean, 19 points in the Premier, only 2 points ahead of Finn Harps and after getting a hammering, which it is, let's be honest, it was a hammering off Athlone. I'd love to know what odds that was. Like, I mean, 4-1... no one would have expected that in a million years, regardless of current form for both teams. Athlone were nowhere near getting a result like that a few months ago, and now they're in the semi-finals for the first time since 1998. Shelburne are in dire straits at the moment, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you touch on the manager there, Ian Morris. Again, he's a man who's coming under pressure, certainly online, but I'd like to think that the people running these clubs don't look at online social media too much, but certainly a lot of unhappy Shells fans after this one. I'm sure you all seen the rumours as well of a bust up in the change room. Now, we've been told that is not true. There was no punch up in the Shelburne dressing room. There certainly was, from what we're told, strong words exchanged, and you can kind of look at some of the characters there and imagine who might have been involved. But for Shelburne, this result, Gary, certainly not good enough, even if they maybe have eyes on the league.
Yeah, look, the league is their priority. That's what matters to them. They need to stay up.
Sorry to cut across you, but they didn't make a huge amount of changes either. This was still a fairly strong Shelburne team. No matter if they had half an eye elsewhere, they should be able to beat a team that's only won, I think, 4 games in the first division this season.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. But as I said, no matter the personnel that was on the pitch, you know, no one likes losing at the same time. But at the end of the day, the FAI Cup is completely meaningless to Shelburne in their current position. It literally doesn't matter a jot. They need to stay up. They got up last year. They did well enough to get up, and they won it comfortably enough in the end. But now they find themselves treading water above Finn Harps, who we were talking about the whole season. Who's going to go down and who's going to be in the playoff? It was either Harps or Cork. Harps or Cork. No, Shelburne are definitely in that position. And I suppose if Derry as well don't wash themselves, if they take another beating, they'll be in that mix too. So, look, it's not easy for Shells. The Premier Division is the real priority. And if they don't get their act together a bit, Harps are going to be up them. So I think, it's not great losing to one of the poorer sides of the First Division, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Maybe the old reported bus stop in the dressing room might spur them on a bit, because they definitely need it.
I have to say, I don't think the Shell supporters and I don't think the board will agree that the FAI Cup is meaningless, because it was worth quite a bit of money to get to this stage. So it was probably worth another few pounds to advance to the semi-finals, and I'm sure Shells fans would like to have the opportunity of a Dublin derby potentially against Bowes in the semi-finals.
Yeah, and that's all grand, but people won't look to the FAI Cup with much solace if they're getting relegated or they're into a playoff.
Yeah,
Longford Town had that. Wasn't today or yesterday, but it was a good while ago.
2007.
Yeah, remember it well. Got to the FAI Cup final, and you know, there wasn't that much buzz about it. There wasn't that much about it at all. Went up to the RDS and lost. But we were also relegated that season. So at the end of the day, the FAI Cup, while it's worth a few pound, it's no comparison to getting relegated into the graveyard, as people call it. So I think that'll wear off soon enough, and they'll be looking to their Premier Division and be happy that they're in it if they stay up.
Yeah, so a good discussion on Shelburne there, but let's hear from the victorious manager now. Adrian Carberry joins us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the show for the very first time by the Athlone manager, Adrian Carberry. He joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Adrian, first of all, massive congratulations into the FAI Cup semi-final. Maybe you'll know, I should have done my research really. I can't remember the last time Athlone have actually reached this stage of the competition, but an absolutely fantastic win over Shelburne.
Kieran, thanks very much. It's great to be on the show. And it's fantastic. Great result of the weekend. I can't remember the exact date, but I do believe it was against Longford. I think we beat Longford the last time.
That's why you'd be out of my memory. So
that's it. You've erased it away.
Yeah.
That's no problem. I understand that. I understand that totally. But yeah, look, the whole club is absolutely buzzing. I think we just spoke briefly. It's been coming. And finally, we got it out there where everyone, you know, hit peak form, and that's what we needed. And it was a great performance.
Yeah,
and
a hat-trick from Dean George. I think he's described it as the best day of his career so far. But he's a player that's definitely caught my eye, definitely in the 2 games against Longford. He seems to link up very well with Ronan Manning, obviously, who's the star man in your team. But you must be delighted for young Dean.
It's great. And Kenny, he's a hard run in terms of, you know, as a striker, you need to score goals. And that's bottom line. But he hadn't scored up to this point. Very unlucky at times, but has been involved, and he's got a good run with Lee Duffy getting sent off a few times. And Dean has come in, and he's worked very hard for the team. And like you said, he's been involved in a lot of set-up play for Ronan Manning. He's set up a couple of other goals, got a great penalty for us against the winner against Cove, where he was taken down in the box, where he's clever, just got ahead of the keeper. So he's been very good in that regard, in terms of his involvement within the game, without actually scoring goals. And we knew it was coming. There was a bit of a joke going around the training ground, you know, for Dean, like, you know, that when he does score, he'll go mad altogether. and we knew it. We knew the boy would score. We at some stage, and we good faith in him, and in fairness to him, he repaid that on Saturday. And we even said it at half time. It was said, Dickie and myself, we were saying, you know, Dean, you got one. There's three there for you, definitely, because we could see the way the game was going. They were opening up a bit for us, and we were causing mayhem from set pieces. And I could see it. I knew we'd get more chances. And in fairness to him, he came up with a hat-trick, which is fantastic. I'm delighted for him.
Yeah, you mentioned Lee Duffy there. You brought him in mid-season, one of the more experienced players in the team. You had Darren Meenan as well for a certain period this year, but as you said, Lee Duffy's been suspended for a while now and Darren Meenan's left the club. So it's been the young players that have really stepped up to the fore this year for you. I think Jack Reynolds, another really good young player. Timaloo there that was with Longford as well. I thought he was excellent in the recent meeting between the two town sides as well. So you've got some really nice young players coming through with Athlone.
Some great players. Kieran, just the situation we're in, you know, we found ourselves, you're right, Darren retired, it was great service at Athlone, retired during a year there for us, and you know, Joel Castrain as well, just got too much from travelling and working and everything else, so he stepped away as well. We didn't see the full exploits of him, and we're forced to put these players in, and ideally we'd like to, you know, blood them, put them in, take them out, put them in, you know, and let them grow up in confidence. But we've been in a situation where we had to play them a lot more than we wanted, and you have to understand with playing young players like that, they will make mistakes, they won't last 90 minutes, and it's been evident in games, and, you know, mistakes have been made, and we've done, you know, we had a brilliant 45, it might be as good in the second half of the match, or things like that have happened, but they've really learned, and that's the thing about them, and it's a great experience for them moving forward. We just want to keep them injury free and not get them get their heads down or worried about stuff too much, but they've been fantastic, and again, stepped up to the plate, and the younger guys, you look at Tim Allen, just gone 18. Jack Reynolds was 18 last week. Adam Lennon, 18. And even the two boys in the middle of the park, two 22-year-olds there, and Ronan Manning is still only 20 years of age. So, very young squad. And on Saturday, again, it was 90-plus minutes we were still going at the end. We were still going.
Yeah, and it was a great week overall for yourself personally. You signed a new contract with the club. It's what I suppose you'd describe as a long-term contract in League of Ireland standards anyway. I think it's a two-year deal, am I right, with the option of a third?
That's right. And it was very easy, to sit down with the committee. The committee being very good to me, Kieran, going in. And we are trying to push it forward. It's not been good enough on the pitch. Last couple of years, and it needs to get better. It needs to get better, and we've pulled them back to Athlone, the training at Athlone now, and we're trying to link in with the town and just create a bit of a buzz around it. And things like this match of the weekend, you know, you're winning a cup quarterfinal, you know, it really does. It helps in that. It gives you a big boost, and that's the plan going forward, to make more inroads into reaching out to the community here in Athlone, and that'll be done. I know COVID is kind of holding it up a bit, but that will be done. That's coming on stream in different ways, but that's the plan. And the committee have been great with us, so it made the talk about staying on and helping out with Athlone, it made it a lot easier, working with good people, in fairness.
Yeah, and it's great to hear as well that the effort is going in there to link in with the community, because it's something many, many League of Ireland clubs have struggled with down the years, and I think it's something in recent years that they've started to, the penny's kind of dropped, that they need to form more links with the community to try and build the brand. And obviously the publicity the club has got out of this quarterfinal win has been absolutely fantastic as well online. Everybody's talking about Athlone at the moment. As you mentioned, you probably can't fully cash in on that at the moment because obviously fans can't go to the stadium, which is a huge shame. But do you feel the club is going in the right direction now after a couple of really difficult years off the pitch?
I think so. It is very good. The facilities down there help, and they're adding to it all the time. We're putting it in a gym there now, for the players, so we can keep all the training in-house, trying to keep it all in-house where you all come together, even if you're injured now, that you can come in and do your recovery, your rehab there as well, so that you're never left alone away, but it's bringing us all together. And that's one thing, I suppose, during these COVID times, you learn, like, you know, the chance to get to bring them all in together, it's fantastic, it's great, because it really does give everyone a lift, and that's the plan, to keep it all in-house, that we're all together as much as possible. A nice, happy little family, please God, and that will help going forward. You know, it's all about, you know, improving the culture down there. Team culture probably has been, you know, your you're from bottom or second from bottom, you know. And again, this year, unfortunately, that's where he finished. But I mean, it's to try and change the mindset there. Try and change it that, yeah, we can reach above this. We can get above this. And it's about attracting players too as well. So again, I'm back to Saturday again, winning the game against Premier Division opposition, you know, makes that all easier, you know.
Yeah, two questions just off the back of what you said there. It's great to hear that everything is in the one spot for you in terms of training, because not many clubs have that in the League of Ireland. Obviously, yeah. Dundalk have it at Oriel. I think Waterford train in the RSC as well. But at the same time, could that make it slightly more difficult, the fact you're training in that loan, to attract players to the club? And we'll start with that question, I suppose.
Yeah, you know well, because in Longford is near to Dublin, that loan. So if you're bringing, you know, the majority of players, you're probably getting out of Dublin. So, Longford is a stop before us, really, you know. But the road is good. I have to say, you know, we're on the motorway. So it's not too bad at all. And it's just, I suppose, it's showing them what we have to offer, that we train on the main pitch, that we have our gym facility there, we have a strength conditioning coach there as well, and all the things we can offer them too as well. So it's really about selling the club, and I think we're in a better place now, and we want to be in an even stronger place going forward to attract players.
Yeah, and secondly, you mentioned it there, unfortunately you did finish second bottom again this year, but you took 12 points from your 18 games and you only took 18 from your 27 last year, so you could argue there was actually progression this year, even though you finished in the same position. I think your goal difference was better this year as well, so definite signs of improvement this year at Athlone.
It has, and if you think back, Kieran, to be honest, you know, Decky Constantine is in with me from Limerick. You know, Decky's a League of Ireland head as well, and had great success in the junior game down with Pike Rovers and a couple of other teams down there in the junior league. But Decky's development officer as well with the FEI. But, you know, Decky's done his qualification in strength conditioning side of the game, and that's been a huge boost to us. So we came in unknown, really, and I was in the women's game beforehand, and we came on unknown, and even just to get a team up on the pitch was a big test for us, you know. And we got up there and we were competitive in some games, we came up short in others, but you know, the players bought into what we were trying to do, and it did get better, and we had some fantastic spells and games. Just needed to be more consistent, I suppose. Consistency was probably what let us down, and again, maybe youth as well is another side of that. But look, we're hoping, we see now in a one-off game what you can do. So I mean, it gives the players great belief, and our thing now is to try and keep all these players together. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, I suppose that is the big question I have to ask you, Adrian. I know your club awards were the other night. Ronan Manning picked up the Player of the Year. And there's a lot of talk about him at the moment, obviously because of his connections as well, his brother playing in England. Yeah. He looks very much cut from the same cloth, I have to say. He looks a very, very talented player. Is it going to be difficult to keep him and players like him at the club, particularly now that you're starting to hit the headlines?
Yeah, for sure. What amazed me was that we were able to get him so easy, you know, bring him in so easy. And there was talk of Ronan Manning being hard to manage and hard, you know, other managers giving up on him. We brought him in and we worked with him, and I have to say he's been great. He's been like, you know, took to it like a duck to water. Fantastic for us, you know. He was very good for us and a great guy to work with and a pleasure to work with. Yes, it's going to be hard to keep him, going to be very hard, but we will be trying. We will be trying to keep him. He's still a young guy, still a bit to go, still a bit to learn. But yeah, a fantastic talent. Unbelievable at times, the way he can turn players when you think he's gone down a blind alley where he's closed down with two or three players. He has this turn that he can just get away. Unbelievable, in fairness to him, at times this season. And seems to have enjoyed it. He's enjoyed his football, enjoyed his year, so it was great. So we'll see. It's a big chat to have, a big discussion. It really tests me in my negotiation skills, but I have to say, we can't hold him back. If there's something bigger for this boy, we can only help him on his way, and hopefully you know, we get something from that as well.
And have you started planning? Have you sat down with the board for next season? Obviously, it's very difficult for clubs to budget at the moment, with the fact that it's probably likely there won't be supporters in the ground again next year. There's uncertainty over whether the Watch LOI will continue, whether clubs will be able to get income through streaming. A lot of uncertainties there, so very hard to put a budget together in terms of attracting players for next season.
Yeah, and you're spot on. It gives the club great credit there, where they haven't overspent, or that they're not. They're looking at the end of the season, and the cup run has helped us. You know, it's brought in money for us. and we're in a good place. We're in a good place financially in terms of, you know, the, have our own ground. There's you know, nothing much other than that, and everything is in a good place financially. So it's now there is some money to put into the team next year at the moment, and hopefully with a good cup run, that like we can add to that, you know, going forward.
Yeah, and look, before I let you go on the cup run, it's Bowes or Dundalk for you in the semi finals. Have you got a preference?
Oh. Where do you go with this one? Two fantastic teams, two you know, powerhouses in Irish football. And you know, been brilliant. Both clubs have been brilliant for Irish football and really pushed it on. Where one team is producing fantastic young talent, the other team, you know, is have gone on great runs in Europa League group stages. Just fantastic. And they deserve every credit going for them. I know the new manager came in and Vinny before, and in fairness, both of them deserve great credit. You know, with Dundalk, and whoever we get, we know it's just going to be a really, you know, David Goliath tie. Like, we're going to be strong underdogs, as you'd expect. It's going to be very hard, but it's where we want to be. We want to be playing the top teams and give it a right go. And no one expects us to do anything. So, I mean, it's great for us. We really have a free shot to see if we get to a final, you know. So, that's the team talk, I suppose, there. But yeah, look, you can only admire them. You don't care who it is, you know, but I have to say, it's great to be there. It's great to be, you know, what an occasion it'll be for these players.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant stuff. Adrian, thanks so much for speaking to us today, and best of luck in that semi-final.
Pleasure talking to you. No problem at all. Thanks.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.
Right, we're going to stick with the Premier Division for the moment, and we'll look ahead to the final round of fixtures. And there's basically something on the line in every game, which is what we love to see. Tomorrow, though, before the final round of fixtures, Shamrock Rovers take on St. Pat's. The game's live on telly as well. Rovers will be presented with the trophy in this one, I believe. Obviously, look, Rovers trying to keep that unbeaten season, that goal alive. Pats, as we said, two wins to end their season. They could end in the top four, but they need to mind their goal difference as well if they don't win these games, because, as I said, they could end up on the same points total as Finn Harps, and at the moment Pats have a nice healthy goal advantage over Harps, but that could easily turn around if they were to take a couple of heavy beatings in these two upcoming Dublin derbies. So we'll start with you, Gary, since you've had so much to say about St. Pat's tonight. Do you see them having any chance of getting something against the champions?
No, I don't. Rovers, I think, while it's a condensed season and they'll probably be getting abuse about that anyway, it's a great opportunity to go unbeaten throughout the year, regardless of what type of season it was in COVID and all the rest of it. It still went unbeaten, so it'll be an achievement for them. And look, beating Pats is probably a good enough occasion to do it. So they've Rovers have three games left, and tomorrow's the first one. They'll be lifting the trophy. No one wants to lift the trophy, really. Not that I'd know much about lifting trophies, but I think. You don't want to do it on the back of a loss either. So they'll want to put out a nice, strong performance, slap a few by Pats, and move on to the next couple of games to finish off their season unbeaten. I don't see Pats coming away from this game with anything.
Moving on to Rovers again, their final game of the season is away to Shells. So this could be absolutely massive, because Rovers could potentially condemn Shelburne to a relegation playoff while keeping that unbeaten season going. James, we'll go to you for this one. Shells with the home advantage, but again, as we often mention, how big is home advantage when you don't have the supporters there? There's going to be huge pressure potentially on Shelburne here, particularly if they're hearing from elsewhere that Finn Harps have maybe got an early goal against Waterford.
Oh yeah, the pressure's all on them. There's pressure on Harps as well, but when you have something breathing down your neck the way Shells have Harps now, you start to feel it. It's hard to know, to be honest, because is Bradley going to, after they're awarded with the trophy and they're playing the remaining games, is he going to stick on a few of the young lads from the B team or however that works and give them a run out and tell them, you know, just enjoy yourself, express yourself, or are they just going to go, as Gary said, for the unbeaten run and try and dominate the last two games? I don't know. Personally, I think they'll try and dominate. And if they do, I don't see Shelbourne getting a result, no matter what way things are going on in Ballybuffet or wherever Harps are at the time.
Yeah, and sticking with the relegation theme and the relegation battle, Cork City, they're already down, but they host Derry City. Now, the news breaking today, Derry will be disciplined by the FAI for not playing that game against Shamrock Rovers. That could get very, very messy indeed, because Derry City were under the instructions from the health authorities up here not to travel and to quarantine the team for 14 days. So that's going to get very, very messy. But Derry can, providing there's no point deductions or anything like that, they can secure their Premier Division status with a win, and a draw would probably be enough as well to keep Derry safe, regardless of everything going on. Given how poor Cork have been this season, Derry should be well able to get a result, shouldn't they, Gary?
Oh, they should indeed. I'd say if the first team had COVID, the lot of them, I'd say they'd still be Cork. So I don't think they'll be worried about that at all. Look, Cork have had an interesting season, let's say, and it was interesting last week when the vote was done. So, look, I think it's important that Derry keep going, and put a bit of daylight between them and the teams are below them. Don't get dragged into that mess.
Yeah, I suppose even regardless of how the season ends, James, do you feel like Declan Devine might be a manager under some scrutiny? They've not performed overly well this year, particularly since the lockdown.
I don't think so, to be honest. There's not much talk of him, you know, being under pressure, or is he safe, so to speak. They seem to like him down there, and he's done great stuff for the club. To be honest, I don't think any of that talk will come out about them until the season's finished, and they definitely know where they finished in the league. I mean, as you said, like, they're in seventh now, 19 points, two games in hand on most other teams, I think. So it's hard to know. I wouldn't consider them under pressure, and that's just going on media speak, as they say. The league position obviously isn't favourable to what they've achieved before, and they have underperformed this year, and there's lots of reasons, I'm sure, for that. But give it till the season is fully finished, and then come back to me. I think he's all right for now.
Did I hear some him and hawing there from Gary Riley?
You most certainly did. Yeah. I know what you're saying, James. That there isn't a whole pile of chat about it, but I just don't think they had a great season at all. I know they lost Junior and stuff like that from last season, but yeah, look. I thought he'd be under a bit more pressure than he is at the minute. This has some poor losses.
Just poor performances in general, Gary. Yeah, now, look, this isn't me at all rubbish. Saying that he is under pressure or should be under pressure. It's my job as a podcast host to put these questions out there and get people's opinions. I think people know from listening to the show, I'm a big, big fan of Declan Devine. And I think he will get the benefit of the doubt given everything that's happened. And Derry's probably one of the clubs that's been affected more by COVID, because they had a lot of new players coming into the squad, particularly from outside of the League of Ireland. So very difficult to bed those in. And some players that came in at the start of the season had to leave then because of the COVID situation. So I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt. He did a great job last season. And if next year is a bit more steady off the pitch, hopefully he can get them back to those type of levels.
If I can just come in there, I think, like, I know we keep going back on COVID this and COVID that, and it is having a surreal effect on clubs in unique ways for each one. Like, as you said there, Derry have probably had it harder than most. They have had it harder than most than any club in the country, because they've literally been in the hotbed of the most infectious area on the island. So, like, we don't know what way players approach these things, or how they approach training or getting to and from work and stuff like this, you know. People could be worried about this. It could be in the back of players' minds when they're focusing on football and other stuff. It's such a massive part of life now, and that includes sport and life, that everybody reacts different, every club reacts different. You could write this as a COVID season for Derry. You wouldn't know what happened next season with maybe, we don't know what way restrictions will be and crowds back and all that, but just say that we're somewhat back to semi-normal state of life. They could have a great season next season with the crowds back in the Brandywell and everybody kind of, you know, feeling a bit safer. This season, you know, stuff like COVID affecting you, I kind of give people the benefit of the doubt in most situations. And in Derry's case, I definitely would.
Yeah, you make a very good point there, James. The players are only human, and I think people need to remember that, especially in these times. But look, let's get a prediction from you both. Gary, you've gone for Derry. James, what way are you leaning?
Yeah, I'd go for Derry as well.
just think they've really,
really went out on a limb on this one, didn't we?
Well, I'm him and Hahn here myself, because I think Derry have kind of struggled for creativity this year. Cork will probably want to go out with some bit of pride. Wouldn't surprise me if this one ends in a draw, to be honest.
I don't know. I think the pride thing is well and truly gone. I mean, like, you know, we're playing for pride. The pride boat sailed a long time ago. It's done. The season's finished.
Colin Healy, though, he just seems like a character that won't let the season just peter out like that. And
Here,
he can only do so much. There's the thing of letting, and there's the thing of just teams being better than you, and that's it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. We'll wait and see what happens. But even if they do pick up just a point, that more than likely should be enough. Let's move on to the battle for Europe. Dundalk hosts Sligo. A point will do it here for Dundalk, and Sligo need a win to have a chance at the top four. And again, they'll be hoping for cup results to go their way then. And Sligo will be back in Europe for the first time in quite a few years. This is a game that I think the Dundalk manager needs to win if he wants to be there next season and just silence some of them critics, James.
Yeah, like, I expect them to win, to be honest. Sligo are 4 points behind them, so it'd be a great win for Sligo if they could grab it. But I just think Dundalk are that little bit better than Sligo. Sligo had a great run of form after the lockdown, and it slowly slowed down, I suppose. But I just can't understand this thing of, you know, these massive expectations the Dundalk fans have for this manager. Whatever about the club, you expect big things from the club and the team. But for this manager, for what he's done already, for them to nearly want his head, or some of them at least, over possibly missing out on Europe. To be honest, I don't think they will. I think the other teams just around them aren't good enough to keep it going for the last two games or so. I think
have you hit the nail on the head there, though? Is that the point the Dundalk fans are making, that they can't have any greater expectations with this manager, that they feel they need a more experienced character to come in if they're going to regain the title next season and get back to the heights of being within a kick away from a domestic treble like they were last year?
Well, what could you say to that? Who is this experienced, mysterious figure that they're expecting to walk in?
Yeah, well, that is the question, because if you look, I don't know if anyone can throw me out a name there from within the League of Ireland that we've been familiar with. There's not a huge pool of managers out there, is there, Gary?
No, there's no one, unless you get Stephen Kenny to come back in the Ireland gig. It isn't going to happen. I don't know who they're... James, you're dead right. Who are they looking for that is going to come and run the team and knows all the players?
If you look at that fella they were supposedly talking to before Felipe was brought in, your man from, was a Man City he was with or something?
Yeah.
He had a fairly good CV in terms of coaching and management and all that sort of crack. But they wanted his head before he had even got in the door, because he was just hanging around and observing. Do you know what I mean? Nobody really knew anything about him until they did a Google search. And he had a good CV. He was experienced. But now suddenly they bring in Filippo, who nobody heard of, and he's done an absolutely brilliant job, in my opinion. And they're saying, oh no, we need someone more experienced. But where? Pull this fella out of this magic hat the Dundalk fans are expecting and get him to win a league again, or get him to do so well in Europe against the likes of Arsenal. And then it just bewilders the mind.
Roddy Collins looked quite well in that Dundalk top recently, didn't he?
I heard he's retired now.
Look, let's move on. Before we do, though, give me your predictions for that one. Dundalk, Sligo. Will Dundalk get the point they need? Gary, first of all.
Yeah. 2-0 Dundalk.
Yeah, I'd say 2-0 Dundalk as well, actually.
All right, I'll side with Dundalk to get at least a point there. Let's move on again, back to the relegation theme of things. Finn Harps hosting Waterford. Harps need a win and results elsewhere to go their way if they're going to get out of that relegation playoff position. While Waterford need a win to guarantee third, that's if Sligo win. So there's a bit of pressure on both sides here. James, start with you. Waterford have impressed us, but they've blown hot and cold at times this year. They've had a change in management themselves. Can they get one last big result and potentially secure European football next season?
I think you've said it there. Like, Waterford have had a mixed season, but all the rubbish going on off the pitch, I think they've done fairly well, the players, to be where they are, regardless of who's in charge. Harps, you know, playing at home, it's hard to beat Harps at home, no matter what club you are. And the way the pitch is, no disrespect to Harps, they've great volunteers up there. They're working their arse off to get that pitch in shape. But they're used to it. They know how to play on them bobbles and the little dips and everything. Waterford will go down there, or go up there, should I say, and it's going to be tough for them. You know, both clubs are going for it. Harps will be throwing everything to get these 3 points to get out of that relegation zone, because they can see it. They believe in themselves that they can do it, and they're only 2 points behind Shells. Like that, a win at home to Waterford will be absolutely huge. And as you said, Waterford are looking for the European spot. They're on 24 points. Only 2 points ahead of Sligo. So that'll be in the back of their mind as well. You know, how are Sligo doing? What do we need to do here? I can see Harps nicking it with maybe 1-0.
I was just going to say, Gary, the worst thing that could happen from a Harps point of view is probably if Sligo get an early goal, whereas if news filters through to Ballybuffet that Dundalk have a couple of goals lead early on, the Waterford players might just be deflated, and that's where Harps could capitalise and take their moment.
I think it's down to Harps to... They really need to pull it out of the fire. And James, you mentioned the pitch there. I appreciate that they're working very hard, but by God, it's in an awful state altogether. Like it's going to be a real war up there. I probably wouldn't even be looking forward to watching it, but it'd be certainly an interesting watch. And I think James, you said about Waterford. You know, could the pressure be lifted on them by Dundalk going a couple of goals ahead, which is probably what we expect. Could really do give Harps a lifeline.
Yeah, so come on, let's get down to decision time on this one. Harps, Waterford. Gary, your prediction?
Oh, an absolute slugfest, but Harps will come out 1-0.
James?
Yeah, Harps 1-0 as well. Goal in the second half.
Oh, God, the Shell yeah. Fans will be sweating listening to this one. Let's move on to two Dublin clubs. It's a Dublin derby, St. Pat's against Bowes. As we mentioned, Pat's could end up absolutely anywhere in this league table yet. While Bowes, they've got not an awful lot to play for here, but I suppose they'd like to heap a bit of misery on St. Pat's if they could. Gary, the fact that Pat's maybe have a little bit more incentive and the home advantage, would you be leaning towards them?
Yeah, they'd probably do have a bit more incentive. You know, it's going to be interesting with the other games that are going on to see what way they're gonna play. Of course, you have to think about tomorrow night as well, because the picture will be a bit different then. But at the same time, Bowes, you know, they still want to win. You know, they had a bad loss there against Harps last time out, so they'll want to right that wrong, I suppose, even though they're fairly much clear and free out on their own and in second place, which is a great result for them over the season. So, look, I don't think they'll want to just lie down against Pats either. It's still a Dublin derby, one of the many Dublin derbies that there are. So they'll still want to beat them.
Yeah, James, Bowes have generally bounced back well from disappointments this year. And as we said, they haven't really got much more than pride to play for here. They've secured second place and they might as well have an eye on their upcoming cup clash against Dundalk as well. But you probably would fancy them to bounce back here against an out-of-form St. Pat's side. Well, that's unless Pats can cause a bit of an upset and beat Shamrock Rovers tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, I can see Bowes not winning fairly easily, but I can see them winning comfortably. I don't see Pats pulling a result out of the bag against Bowes. Bowes just have that little bit extra quality in terms of some of the individuals that they have in the team. They've done absolutely brilliant this season. I mean, second place and depending on other results, it could be only a few points between them and Rovers in the end. If Rovers were to magically go and lose their last three games, I think it'd only work out at like 4 points between the teams or something. Now, they probably won't. It'd probably be 10 points. But, you know, you have to give credit to Keith Long and his staff and the players. They've really outdone themselves this year, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to call a Bowes win there, James.
Yeah, I'd say that as well.
And Gary?
Yeah, 1-0 Bowes.
All right, lovely stuff. Let's move on to talk about the playoff final. Before we do that, though, we're going to hear from Dara Doyle after he got Longford to this stage with that win over UCD on Friday.
I'm here with Longford Town boss Dara Doyle. Dara, I'm kind of struggling where to start with this one. 3-2, last minute goal from Dean Byrne. I suppose that the first question I should ask you, did you always have belief? You went 2-1 down in extra time. Did you have the belief your lads would come back?
No, listen, I really did. And I've said that from the start of the year with the group of players that we have there. I'm full of belief in them. It's been inconsistencies in certain things in our games that made us finish as the fourth best team in the league. We finished fourth. And that's why we didn't challenge Bray and Drogheda. But we definitely have the group and the players that I believe can challenge to get promoted from this league. We're not going to do it the way we wanted to by winning the league, but we can do the next best thing. And with the results and the performance tonight and how we won the game, it's going to be a big high for us going into the game next week against Galway, who we know are a really good side and on a great run since John has come in. So it's really important we prepare well for the game next week and get ourselves ready to put on a much improved performance to the last time in which we played Galway.
Yeah, and obviously it was a difficult start to the game. You go behind from a set piece again, but your team scored two set pieces tonight, so finally that luck has swung.
Yeah, no, listen, and Joe Gorman's come up trumps. He's run really well. He's had a good performance himself in Wexford last week, although really disappointing to lose the game 2-1. He put in a good performance himself. He done that again tonight. He was a big player for us, and that's the reason we got into the injury time. So delighted with Joe to come up like that, and then for Dean Byrne to score the winner with the injury he's had, and to be mentally as strong as he's had to be, and to work as hard as he's had to do to get himself back available to us. And I think I mentioned it earlier, he's a special player, and that was a special goal and a crazy mad night.
Yeah, we've just been speaking to Dino. He's told us how well you and Johnny have had to manage him. Obviously, it was a really horrible injury. He's come back from it. You have to still be careful with his game time. Yeah. He said it's top notch. Where do you feel he is physically at the moment, though? Is he far away from getting a 90-minute?
No, listen, we'll see. It's one of those that we'll work with Dean. And like you say, we have had to work with him. We've got to thank our medical staff. You've got Willie and Albert that have done great work with him. And it's not just the injury side of things. It can be mentally as well by keeping people involved. Keep talking to them, and that's really important. You can't undervalue the importance of something like that to a player, because I think it shows that you have their back and you want them back with the group. And he's come back to the group and proved to be a massive, massive asset tonight to win us the game. So delighted for Dean. Really am.
You might agree, you might disagree. First half, I thought Longford probably a little bit flat. You did create a couple of chances. Carroll Chambers in particular had a really good one. Yeah. But second half, your team owned that second half. You see, bar a couple of counter attacks here and there, which obviously you're expecting when Longford are flooding forward trying to get that goal. Longford had so many chances. Did you think it was going to be one of them days?
No, honestly, I always had belief that we could nick a goal. You see, we had so many attacking players on that pitch at one stage. I think he was in the middle on his own there, looking around at five attackers ahead of him. So, but we needed to do that. And then we also needed to then flip it a little bit once we got the second goal in injury time, where you had the two lads, Kerrigan and 17, dropping into really dangerous areas. So we had to sacrifice Aaron McCabe and bring in Matthew O'Brien to give us a little bit in there to make sure, because at that stage we weren't chasing it, but we weren't chasing the game, and yet we win a goal with the last kick of the game. It was just mad. But I'm delighted with the whole group. It's a fantastic group that we've had this year. I've said that from day one, and we can still achieve something special together. We can, and I genuinely believe that.
And you used the bench to full value tonight, five substitutes. Obviously, you took off Grimes as well, who a lot of people thought was brilliant. Was that just at that stage you had options on the bench, you needed to try and do something to change something, or was there something tactical you identified there?
No, there wasn't overly anything tactical. You know that obviously Dylan's come back in, he'd had his own injury problems with this season, and I thought he would look to tire a little bit once or twice out of possession. And we do need to put on attacking players, so we're bringing on the players we brought on. We're adding fresh players that will add an impetus to get forward. But as mentioned, Dylan Grimes' performance, I thought he was excellent tonight. He was really, really good for us, and he was a standout player for us until he came out. But listen, we need to use that squad in there and the group of players we have. We've done that tonight, and the subs have come on. And you look at Callum Warfield, who's come on, made a real impact and was really difficult and caused all sorts of problems to the back four of UCD there tonight.
And so, Niall Barnes as well has had a couple of set pieces.
Yeah, we must mention, but not just the set pieces. I don't know how many times he took on the wing back, and he was really good for us tonight. A great impact from him. I pulled him. He's probably, unfortunately, his performance himself last week in Wexford, he actually put in a good performance and can feel unlucky to be left out. And listen, the good thing is we had a bench there tonight that I could look at and say I had 5, 6, 7 players that I would have no hesitation ever in bringing on, and we used that tonight, like I said.
Galway next. Look, there's a couple of mental scars there for supporters. 6-2 last time we met. How do you approach this game?
Yeah, we approach it and we prepare. Preparation is going to be key for the game. We'll be back out on the training pitch 3-4 times before the game. We'll be getting together in groups, working on what we need to do and how we're going to beat Galway for 44 minutes. And the last time we played them, we bossed the game, we owned the game, we looked like we were the team going to win the game. And unfortunately, a couple of set pieces in that night caused us to lose badly 6-2. It was a bad night for us. We've got to hold our hands up to that. We know what to expect from them. We know we need to be better prepared, and we know we need a more consistent performance over the 90 minute and stop and cut out. Like you say, set pieces were a big thing for them last night, barred the one today and one at the end of the first half. We did fine on them, and it's going to be a big part of the game. But they also have some really good players, but they're going to have to prepare for our team that will go into that game on a high now after winning the game in the manner that we did. And we've players left out of the squad there tonight. We went down to Wexford with 15 or 16 players. tonight we've had to let two or three players out of the squad, and that's great to go in next week that we have the full group. But we'll do the work we need to do on the pitch, and we'll organise the lads and make sure we're best set up to get the results we need in Galway, because I believe we can do it.
And finally, we're less than a week away from that game now, and right now there's confusion over where the game's going to take place. There's talk of neutral venues, yeah, but a lot of the feeling was that the side that had the higher league position, which would be Longford, yeah, would have the home advantage. It's a bit ridiculous, less than a week away, we're in this situation.
Yeah, no, listen, it is, and you'd expect that a fixture list is there regardless of who finishes in it. If it was going to be neutral, this should have been told to everyone, yeah, a couple of weeks ago. I was always under the understanding that it would be the highest ranked team, yeah, that comes through the playoff.
Up until the final against the Premier Division side, where it was going to be neutral.
We knew it was going to be neutral. Yeah. But listen, at the end of the day, it's a pitch and it's 11v11. And it's, the unfortunate thing is that we can't have crowds in, because that game tonight with crowds in, you're probably seeing the bench's reaction and the substitutes' reaction.
I think you picked up a yellow, didn't you?
Listen, I gladly pick up a yellow if we win games like that. So no problem there. But it would have been fantastic had we had our supporters, yeah, in that ground tonight, because it was a great way to win a game. It was, and I can only imagine what it would have been like. But we are in a scenario and living in a world where we can't have crowds in, and games are being streamed and people have to watch online. I still think I heard some people looking over the wall tonight. Was that the people there?
There was a few, okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, you could hear
socially
that.
Distant, of course.
Yeah, you could hear that. So no, listen, if it's neutral, it's neutral.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, we'll be ready, and we need to go and put on a performance. And if we do that, we have every chance of putting ourselves into that final playoff game against whoever finishes ninth in the Premier, and we'll be ready.
One down, two to go. Thanks very much, Dara.
Thanks, lads. Much appreciated.
Yeah, Gary, you'll remember I said it last week on the show that I had some doubts about this system, that Dara Doyle likes to play this three at the back. But I said if we got through against UCD, I'd shake his hand and tell him he knew more than me. And that's certainly what I did after the full-time whistle the other day.
No surprises there.
can he guide Longford to the final? I know they're billing this one as the playoff final, but really, in truth, it's a semi-final. Longford 180 minutes away from promotion. But I mean, if you were looking at this in terms of a horse race, Galway bet Longford a long, long way last time out. There's nothing really to suggest that they can reverse the form here, is there?
Look, as a Longford fan, I can only see one result, and that's Longford Town straight through into the playoff final, let's say. It's going to be a really interesting game. I wasn't too confident last week again going into the game against UCD, but look, Longford did what they needed to do. They made it probably a hash of it at times, and they made it difficult, but they did what was required come the end of the game and avoided penalties, which was fantastic. I don't think I could have handled that. But, you know, the game back in the bowl might be a psychological advantage, having had a great result there last week. It's going to be a very tight game. You know, of course, as we said many times before, that we've been all scarred by that horrific performance in Longford against Galway. So, you know, Galway will be taking some stock from that. Don't forget, of course, Galway have had some great results in the last few weeks. You know, beating Bray a couple of times. They really were Bray's torn this season. So, look, two probably, I don't know if you could call them high-flying teams, but certainly on the up teams after two great results. So,
well, you can definitely call Galway a high-flying team. Their record since Caulfield came in, yeah, is phenomenal. But James, I think if you could, as a Longford fan here, if you could click your fingers and say, we're going to sort the set pieces for this game, we'll be absolutely solid as a rock from set pieces, we're not going to concede, and we're not going to cause ourselves any problems, you'd feel a lot more confident. Because for 44 minutes in the last meeting between these two teams, Longford absolutely battered Galway. They were 2-0 up, and then they switched off just before the halftime break and conceded from a set piece. And we all know what happened after that. They scored 5 set pieces on the night in a 6-2 win. So take the set pieces out of it. Very simplistic view, very simple way to put it. They would have won 2-1. I know that's not how it works. But if you could just know that Longford are going to go into this game and they're going to have that set piece issue sorted, you'd feel a lot more confident, wouldn't you?
Look, I would probably be around the Longford players more than anybody. And from speaking to them and being around them all season, I would believe and be under the impression that the 6-2 win was kind of a once-off freak result, which it was. We collapsed that night, essentially, and just couldn't deal with it. I don't know whether it was the pressure from every set piece coming in, or look, we can all say what we want and look at results. at the end of the day, we finished, I think it was fourth. Not what we wanted, but it's still up there. Dara will be well aware of the threat Galway pose now with set pieces, and I'm sure he's aware of any team that poses a threat with set pieces. He'll be aware of how bad we've dealt with them. He's had a week to recover now. The team have had a week to recover. I'm sure they will set out to, you know, don't foul, don't be drawn into foul, don't, if you're going to foul, don't do it in and around the box. And if they do, I would hope, and I am under the impression that they will have had it sorted. And as you know, you can say Galway are flying, you could say the town are flying. It's like a cup final, this match. It's not going to matter. That the other night proved it. I mean, UCD were doing well, and they're probably sick that they lost that game. But anything can happen in these playoff matches. Pressure can get to young players. We have a young team. Galway have a young team. You know, we don't know what way injuries will work out. Will there be any COVID issues? We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, Carlton didn't play for Galway last week. Was that tactical? Is he injured? Nobody knows. We don't know what's going to happen. Will the set piece thing come into it? We'll probably be expecting it. But at this stage now, you're in the business end of things. You would hope that Longford have it covered.
Yeah, very well put there. It really is a cup final. Form goes out the window, and it's probably going to come down to more who can deal with the pressure best on the night. But we've given you plenty of a Longford insight on the show tonight. Let's get a Galway perspective on things. We're going to hear from our good friend Julian Canny now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, it's been a while since we heard from him on the show, but our paths, they've crossed once again. Well, they'll cross on Friday, in fact, Longford Town against Galway United in the First Division playoff final, as they're calling it. But of course, both teams have two games to go if they're to achieve Premier Division status for next year. It's Julian Canny joining me now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Julian, how's the form?
Not too bad. Delighted to be supporting Galway in this First Division final, as you say.
Yeah, look, it looked a very, very bleak prospect a couple of months ago when John Caulfield came into the club. Galway had no real right to have any kind of thoughts about playoff football at that stage. But I think it's 8 wins from 11 league games in charge, if I'm correct. It's been an absolutely meteoric rise under him. What have you made of the job he's done?
It's been amazing. Like, as you say, yeah, we played, including the playoff now, there was 11 games, and won 8, drawn 1, and lost 2. And before that, we hadn't won any of our first 8 games of the season. So it's like, you kind of looked at the team and you said, we should definitely, like, we were down with Athlone and Wexford at the time, and we obviously should have been doing better than that. But yeah, the fact we ended up getting the playoff, and like, when you actually look at it, the first time we got into the playoff position was when the points deduction was put, or when the points were taken back off Cavatelli. We actually hadn't been in the top 5 all season, so it was really kind of amazing that he kept the belief of the lads. Like, to be fair to him, like, it was a run of easy enough games when he took over. Like, I think the first game was Athlone, and then we had a good win away to UCD, but we played like Rovers and Wexford then, and so it kind of built up a bit of momentum. But we did have a bad loss at home to Cove, and that was kind of a real kind of kick in the teeth there, because it was a game you said, right, we've won 5 in a row, go and win this, and then like we probably would have got up to 5th. But the week after that then was the trip to Longford, so we all know what happened there. But so that, I think, like, with that win as well, like scoring so many goals that day really kind of gave everyone a lift as well. So
yeah, you mentioned that defeat to Cove. That seems to have been a bit of a turning point, because as you said, they were in great form up until that. Maybe their feet just started to lift off the ground a little bit too much. And John Caulfield, he's obviously had a bit of a sore out in the dressing room after that game. And they've gone to Longford, and we saw what happened there, as you said. Obviously, it is Longford now in the playoffs. Longford had that absolutely unbelievable win against UCD, whereas Galway, they left it late. Not quite as late as Longford, but they left it late enough against Bray. But the confidence levels have got to be extremely high after beating Bray, who looked like just a couple of weeks ago they were going to win this league. And the fact, as you said, that they put 6 past Longford the last time they met.
Yeah, like the one thing I said now when we were playing Bray at the time, and I was saying if we did get to the final, I'd have, to be honest, I'd have preferred to play UCD than Longford, because I think you look at UCD, they won nearly all their games against the teams at the bottom half of the table, got hardly anything. They got a point off us, obviously, on the last day. I think maybe they drew with Longford, but I think they lost all their 2 games to Drogheda and Bray. So I think, like, they're good at beating bad teams, but I think we'd have had a chance against them. Like that 6-2 game in Longford that we won, like for the first half hour, Longford were the better team in that. And I think Dara Doyle you'll know like what went wrong in the second half, that like we were kind of getting down the wings, we were winning free kicks there, and set pieces cause you havoc then. So I think he'll know probably not what not to do against us, so you might have a bit of an advantage. Obviously you've been a bit of a high, you kind of finished the season a bit and a bit of a slump, but I think like the way you beat UCD was great. But there was actually one point now, one really interesting stat that I came across when I just go on reviewing the season. So I said Alan Murphy, he was in charge for 8 games, and in those 8 games we didn't score the first goal in any of the matches. And since Caulfield has taken over in those 11 games, we scored the first goal 10 times. It was only that game against Cove that we didn't actually take the lead in. So, or actually, sorry, Longford as well. We obviously didn't score first there. But yeah, so that's it. So it's kind of, I think he just got the team, like, given them confidence. And he's, I don't know, sent them out saying, right, we're better than the opposition. Or we should be in a match and, like, go and, I don't know, go take the lead and then we'll win the game, kind of. Whereas I always felt under Alan Murphy, I wasn't entirely sure what the tactics were, the yeah. style of play. And I think we went and we were a bit passive and then let the other team score and then we'd come back. Like, we got 3 draws from behind, which is obviously a good thing, but we weren't really dictating the games. I think that was probably the difference now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why you thought maybe Galway didn't perform like this early on in the season under Alan Murphy, but I think from what you're saying there, we're probably on the same wavelength in that, because I was at the game when Longford beat Galway 1-0 in AM&DC Park. It was an absolutely rotten game of football. It should have ended 0-0 only for Kevin Horgan dropping a clanger in the dying moments, and Longford robbed a 1-0 win on the day. But I looked at that Galway team that day, and I was set up behind the dugouts as well, so I got a good view of everything and the tactics that were being fed into the teams. And Galway actually organisational looked very, very solid. They never really looked like they were going to concede. Longford created very little in the game, but there was absolutely no creative spark in the team. There was no real, as you said, they weren't playing passing football. They weren't hoofing it at the same time. You couldn't really figure out how they were trying to progress up the field. There was no real flow to the tactics. And I think that was the issue for Galway. They clearly had the players there. They were set up defensively okay, but they weren't scoring enough goals. And it's strange, really, when you think of John Caulfield. He's not the first manager you probably would have thought of to come in and get the creative flow going in a team. He's always been seen as more of a defensive manager, but he's clicked the right button since he came in at Galway.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I suppose another thing is, like, our top scorer this season was Carlton. He ended up with 4 goals, and obviously 3 of those were the night he came on against Longford as a sub, and he scored a hat-trick, and then he scored the late winner against Bray 2 weeks ago. So, like, again, we're kind of just, we don't have consistent goal scorers, but I think probably what Caulfield has done, he's given like we're using probably 3 or 4 kind of different strikers during the games and giving them all a bit of confidence. They've all kind of weighed in, like Wilson Wiweru, who's been nominated now for October Player of the Month for the whole league, which is a great achievement for him. I think he scored 3 goals in the month, and obviously Carlton, as I said, he scored, and Enda Curran has weighed in with a few as well. So I think it's just that confidence level as well that he's brought, and just kind of self-belief. So, like, obviously, it's a lot easier when you're winning games to just kind of keep the momentum going as well. So, really looking forward to Friday. I think it'll be a very, very tight game. Like, there's not too much between the two sides, like, but it's... And you'd obviously kind of worry about whichever side gets in against the Premier Division team. Like, Finn Harps, kind of the way they set up, I wouldn't fancy us at all against them. So,
does the neutral venue make it more of a level playing field, though?
Maybe, yeah. But I just think Harps players, like, they're such a big, strong team. And, like, we have a lot of young players in our side. Like, obviously, there's a bit of experience with Shane Duggan there. But a lot of the other players are quite young in the side. And I think Harps are probably bullies. So I'd nearly prefer to play, like, Shells. If they lose and end up in the playoff, they'll be on a real downer. Like, obviously, they had a terrible performance against Athlone last week. I don't know where how Athlone managed to beat them 4-1, but it's you kind of prefer to be up against a team like Shells, who are really on a bit of a downer, rather than like a team like Harps,
be kind of expecting this all season anyway. So
go on, so give us your prediction for Friday.
I'll probably sit in the fence. I'll say it'll be a draw anyway. And after the 90 minutes, who knows what will happen? Like we've a pretty good record actually in the Belfield Bowl, so we might sneak it after extra time, I think. But
yeah, I think Longford's
went the other way.
Longford's record isn't too bad at the bowl in recent times either. Obviously, they won the game on Saturday. They drew 0-0 with UCD there earlier on in the season. They beat them 5-1 there. A couple of seasons ago, 2018 season as well, so they've got a decent record at the bowl as well. So before I let you go, what did you make of the venue choice? Because going into the game on Friday, everyone that I was speaking to was under the impression that the team that finished higher in the table would have home advantage. So if Bray had won and Longford had won, Bray would have had home advantage. But the way it planned out, everyone assumed Longford would be hosting Galway this weekend. But just before kickoff, there was rumours of Daly Mount swirling around. Eventually, we found out just a couple of days ago, I think it was just yesterday actually, that this game's going to be at the UCD Bowl. It seems a strange choice of venue, doesn't it?
The venue's a bit odd. I would agree. I'd have thought that just given the performance in the league over the 18 games, that Longford should have had home advantage, and I wouldn't have had any issue with that. But yeah, the venue itself, I don't know, it could have been Sligo. Maybe Sligo might be at home next weekend, but I don't think it would have been fair to put it in Athlone where with the plastic pitch.
No.
I think they did need to have it on a grass pitch, and I don't know, maybe it was just UCD was the only one available because it's a first division club, there's no games left. So
how long is it from Galway to UCD? It's nearly longer than heading to Bishopsgate, isn't it?
The thing is, with the motorway now, it's kind of easy to get from Galway to Dublin, really. I wouldn't say it's that much of an issue. It's 2.5 hours on a comfortable coach. It would be grand. But it is a bit of a strange one. But I suppose it's not going to be crowded anyway. So I don't know. Does it make that much of a difference whether it was there or Sligo or? But I do kind of agree with your point. I think over the course of the season, Longford got more points, so they probably should have had home advantage for the final.
Yeah, I think more of the issue is it should have been mapped out the minute the playoff structure was decided that it was going to be one leg. Everything should have been detailed. We should have known exactly one leg, extra time penalties, where the games are going to be played, blah, 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 so on. To only find out what this game's UCD in less than a week's notice, it's poor planning. It really is.
Yeah, to be fair now, John Caulfield at the end of the game, he seemed to know it was going to be in a neutral venue. So maybe the clubs have been told, but obviously fans aren't going to be there. So was there any point in letting fans know? I don't know. But it probably should have been stated a bit clearer. But it kind of does seem that the people who really needed to know probably did know. But the fact that venue wasn't even selected was a bit strange as well. So if it had been Galway against UCD, where would that game have been if Daly Mount wasn't available? So who knows.
Anyway, at the end of the day, venues won't matter a thing. It'll come down to the result on the pitch. So let's hope for another cracker in the playoffs on Friday night as Longford Town take on Galway. I was nearly going to say UCD there. And the game has been streamed live and free on the FEI Facebook or on the FEI YouTube account as well, so good to see that. Julian, thanks as ever for joining me, and I'm not going to wish you luck because I really want Longford to get promoted this year. Yeah, very much so. Julian, thanks very much.
All right, cheers, Garen. Bye-bye.
Yeah, so we're coming towards the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed this new format tonight. As always, give us your feedback and let us know if you enjoyed it or not, and any tweaks we can make. We're always trying our very, very best to improve the product here and give you the very best possible podcast, and we do appreciate any messages we do get after the shows. We're going to move on to our regular charity bet segment now, sponsored by bar1racing.com. They give us a €10 free bet to use on the show each and every week, and we try to raise a few pounds for charity. We're just shy of the €100 mark, and James, as he loved to bring up earlier on in the podcast, he had a lovely win when he was last on with us. He had Galway to beat Bray in the league. It was 4-1, so we won a few pounds there. So, James, I'm going to go to you first for this one. What have you got for me this time around?
We are going to go with Longford to beat Galway. after extra time. So that's within the 120 minutes. Now, I'm not sure what odds you'll get on that, or if you can get it. If not, I'll go for Longford to beat Galway overall, but got Longford to beat Galway in extra time.
Right, I'll see. Can we get that priced up for you? But geez, my heart won't be able to take that again. I have to say, I'd rather it's a 90-minute job. But look, we can't have it everywhere. Gary, what about yourself?
I'm gonna go with an old accumulator as usual. Probably won't win the Aten, but
as usual,
we'll have a bit of fun when we're doing it, won't we?
Yeah, that's it.
Right, I have Rovers to beat Pats.
Okay.
I have Derry to beat Cork. Dundalk to beat Sligo and Harps to beat Waterford.
Big odds on that one, I'd say. Fingers crossed, because we're coming towards the end of the season. We're running out of opportunities to make a few pounds for our charities, and I'd feel bad if we couldn't get a few more pounds in the pot, but that's probably my fault, given some of my best picture. before we go, lads, as I said, we were going to chat Europe. Awful stuff in Vienna last night. Our thoughts go out to everyone. Gary, I know we were both out there a couple of years ago for the Ireland game. And it was one of the best Ireland trips I was ever on. Lovely, lovely people, great city. So absolutely horrible to see those scenes last night. But Dundalk head over there now. Again, a bit like Malda, this is one of the games they'll be potentially targeting. But this Rapid Vienna side gave Arsenal a good game, didn't they? So it's a big, big ask for Dundalk yet again.
It is, yeah. And look, the events of last night are obviously very shocking. And I hope as many people... You know, I hope as many people as possible are all right, but very sad events, of course. Look, it's going to be a game that Dundalk will have to target. You know, apparently the manager is on the way out, according to Dundalk fans. So they'll have to do something. I thought they played very well against Mold, a couple of horrific individual errors, and of course it was a. I think there was an individual error there last week, Kieran, from one of the Dundalk senior players, was there?
Oh, I don't know. Can't remember. You remind me. As Joe Gorman said to me the other day, you tell me.
Oh, well, I remember who it was. It was Gary Rogers making another howler in Europe. So, look, hopefully he can avoid that on Thursday and give Dundalk a chance. It's still going to be a very hard game for Dundalk traveling to Vienna.
Austrian football is quite strong. It's quite well funded as well. It really is a big ask for them. James, I forgot what I was going to ask you, to be honest. So just give me your the ultimate pro. Just give me your thoughts on this game overall.
I would love Filippo to send them out there and just run at them and just have a bloody go. Enough of this, you know, let's keep the score down type crap. I think he's a good manager. I think he should send them out now. He knows a lot more about it than I do, I'm sure. But I'd love to just see them go at it and try to get a goal or two and get the win. I don't like this attitude of, you know, whenever an Irish team is in Europe, we'll do our best. You do more than your bloody best. You're representing your club and your country. You want to go out there and win the match, no matter who you're playing against, whether it's David versus Goliath. It doesn't bloody matter. And, you know, they did well against Arsenal last week. I wouldn't, as Gary said, pay too much attention to what Mr. Peart was saying, but I'd agree with him in the sense that you would have liked to have seen maybe a bit more attacking football played. So I'd hope that they'll do it this week. Now, outside circumstances like what was going on last night, I'm sure they've been briefed for security reasons and stuff like that, and you know that'll be in the back of their mind as well, but you'll hope they'll just get the head down, focus on their football and try and go at them. But I can't see anything other than a Vienna win, to be honest.
What I was going to say is, I mean, they played so well in that first half against Malda, and again it's one of them games where what if they had taken a point there, good start to the group stages, they go to the Emirates, they don't play too badly, only a 3-0 defeat, they go into this one with a lot more confidence. It very much has shades of 2016 when Dundalk had that really good start to the group stages and they missed opportunities again, individual errors against Zenit St. Petersburg and some of the other games at key moments cost them crucial points, and they narrowly missed out on getting through to the knockout stages, which is hard to believe. But again, this has kind of the same shades again, moments in that Malda game. If Gannon doesn't make that tackle against Arsenal, some of the individual errors, a lot of what if moments, and you just can't afford that at this level of football.
No, you know, you look back on mistakes and you'll probably be kicking yourself that you made them, and you'll think, what could I have done different? But it's important for them as well not to focus on that. I mean, I'm sure, as Gary brought to our attention, Gary Rogers will be sick with himself, but he's a seasoned pro at this stage. He knows how to get things out of his head as soon as it happens, I'm sure. That's how you continue on in the game. You'd hope that there won't be too many more individual errors costing them points or costing them goals in the game. But look, that's football. You don't know what way it's going to go, and they certainly won't know what way it's going to go until they get in there and they're playing.
Yeah, well, that's where we'll leave it for tonight, folks. A massive thanks to Gary and James for joining me on the show tonight, and a massive thanks to our five guests as well. It's great to have so many voices on the One Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. As I said, leave feedback. We're on Twitter at Between Stripes is our handle. You'll find us on Facebook and Instagram as well by searching for Between the Stripes. And we've got a new website on the way as well, so more news on that over the next couple of weeks. But once again, Gary and James, thanks very much for joining me, and fingers crossed for a massive result for Longford on Friday.
No bother, Borco. Good luck.
Thank you, Ciarán. Good night.